she in college. I'm the first dude she f- without a wallet. I took her to the hood, hit a good, put her on my other bag. Now she coming out the closet for dope boy, strip, hustlers, my fam, jack boy, shooter, bosses, player, games, don't play em. Boy, don't spam. I got my squad on the field, I'm screaming in the stand, and my sticks got drums, it's the battle of the band. Run it up. Cause I die, do time for what I love, we walk in a thin line. I'm a jello mob in the street designer. I done feel more effort, granted recliner. Gonna do what I say like Dip Simon. I'm about to 40 pointers, water, blinding. Looking at a main man at the battle of the band, blood chat. Let them know you're right. DBH Duke got green bricks. Let me show you who I run with. Dope boy, strip, hustlers, my fam. Jack boy, shooter, bosses, player. Games, don't play em. Boy, don't spam. I got my squad on the field. I'm screaming in the stand, and my sticks got drums. It's the battle of the band. Run it up.
From the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio featuring local and independent artists.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio and Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Chase Klotzky. Chase earned her master instructor title while employed with the Department of Defense. Armed with the biomechanical engineer accreditation, she was responsible for designing specialized programs and the supervision of complete success regarding force readiness, unique mission responsibilities, and elite force protection. She is certified as a private investigator. She is certified in international forensic and evidence collection. And she joined the Mutual UFO Network in 1996 and was selected as the Star Team Manager and Deputy Director for Investigations through 2011. Today, Chase is the MUFON Director of Investigations. Chase also focuses attention on international UFO cases reported in Mexico, Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Central America. In November of 2016, Chase became a registered and official lobbyist for the UFO field. This goal was realized through progressive understanding that to truly influence change and offer a knowledgeable commentary on the realities of the UFO phenomena, we must include our nation's elected and the very people that are trusted as our lawmakers. She has extensive history in the field of ufology and diverse investigation background that includes MUFON field reports to ancient artifacts, as demonstrated by her study and hands-on forensic contributions to the elongated skulls and the Star Child skull, in which she maintains the lead investigator. She is also the author of the books Admissible with Richard Dolan and Are Aliens Real?, a book designed to address the questions of UFOs and aliens with children. And I'm happy to say that we have Chase Klotsky on the line with us today. Welcome to the show, Chase.
Thanks so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
Me too. I've heard you on other interviews, on other radio interviews, and I mean, it gave a long intro there, but it could have been a lot longer, I tell you. You've been on a lot of radio and TV interviews, and a lot of people want to pick your brains. So do I.
Well, thank you.
So, tell us a little bit about the STAR team and what it does for MUFON.
Well, the STAR team is a readiness investigation status within MUFON that's kind of your deployment team. It requires more advanced skill sets than normal. It's kind of like the FIs are your normal police that just are out in the community every day, you know, doing, you know, the normal police work it takes to keep a neighborhood safe or a community safe. Mm-hmm. And then you have your STAR team, which are your detectives. They kind of handle the bigger cases that take a little more time and a little more experience, you know, working more complicated. And then, of course, we have the special assignment team, and that's definitely your task force. Every once in a while, a community or an investigation response would require you bringing in just the best of the best. You need experts. You need, you know, just people that with different skill sets all combining their work to come out with a decent disposition or the truthful disposition. And that's kind of how MUFON set it up. We didn't want to reinvent the wheel. The wheel works just fine. So mm-hmm. we've kind of modeled even our investigation protocols. It shouldn't matter whether we're investigating a UFO report, a homicide, or an insurance claim of, you know, a car accident. It's all the same process. We follow the same rules.
Right. Well, you've had a lot of experience with investigations and with the Department of Defense, right?
I was mostly a trainer with the Department of Defense. I worked with readiness, getting troops ready for deployment or special status. I work with Homeland Security, Special Forces, submarine community, even spouses. You never knew what you were going to get. I did it for a long time, and I was fortunate enough to be able to work with different groups. I typically didn't have them for very long. Most training programs were 6 to 8 weeks, and then I wouldn't see them again, but you know, it was an awesome job.
Yeah, sounds like it. And what is involved as a UFO lobbyist? What do they do?
You know, I live in D.C., but before I even lived here, I was very inspired by Steve Bassett and the efforts of the Citizens Hearing for Disclosures, you know, that we've had in the past. Mm-hmm. And I watched these former senators and Congress you know, former employees and lawmakers start out on a Monday where they were being polite and they came in and they were going to listen professionally. You know, and by Tuesday and Wednesday, you know, they're perking up and they're asking the right questions, meaning they were listening and were being educated. They
right.
were getting it.
Right.
By Thursday and Friday, you know, we have, you know, senators standing up saying, I want those files open. We need to know what happened. And, you know, and it was really eyewitness to these guys don't know. Are the guys that go to work every day at our White House and, you know, the Capitol building and even the Senate House, they don't know. That nobody's telling them really what's going on or you know, what we have and what are the implications. So I was really inspired that we need to start including them. Because if you really want change, if we really want more scientific involvement, or we want more legitimate involvement, we can't ignore the very people that sometimes we look at as our opposition.
Right. Well, so what's happening on that front? Anything? I mean,
it's a slow process because, you know, as ufologists, we've picketed, we've petitioned, we've held those two hearings, and we're not any closer of getting in that door. Having the credentials under a Trump administration is also not the best idea.
No.
It was with Obama, but not so much with Trump. I mean, you know, the whole lobbying thing is, you know, kind of the swamp that he talks about, I guess. And, you know, I don't try to get into the politics. We're trying to get into the door. So when I first started working, I started making calls to the Office of Science and Technology, thinking that would be the best office that would help me. And what you learn is not necessarily. It's interesting. You have to learn how DC works, and you have to learn almost who's who and who to approach, because you almost need that sounding board. So if I'm looking into the, you know, intelligence committee, well, Nunes has his hands full, you know, with the FISA warrants and, you know, the Mueller investigation. So I don't want to approach him. His plate's full. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking for the senators and Congress that don't have
Big
cause already overwhelming them.
Right.
But at the same time, enough visibility to hold some clout that they can help me get something pushed forward.
Right. Well, it's the former congressmen and women that heard all this testimony and decided, yeah, there's something to it. We should look into it further. However, you know, that's as far as it goes. A lot of former police officers and pilots are coming forward, but you know, it doesn't have as much clout. Am I correct or not?
We like them, you know, as civilians. We love our military witnesses and police witnesses,
right?
Because they're our trained observers. You're right. For some reason, it wouldn't seem to make that big of a deal up here in D.C., but they are listening, because for the first time, we are making a little headway. Now, it's not the biggest open topic, but for the first time, we had a candidate up for election talking about UAPs openly.
Right.
We have Podesta coming out. We have now the Pentagon former lead of ATIP, you know, openly discussing that the government is investigating, the military is investigating the UFO phenomena. You know, these aren't our conspiracies anymore. How awesome is that one, right? It kind of vindicated all of us that have been saying, you guys, the government obviously cares about these UFOs or these unknown objects. And now that they're admitting this, it's amazing. So I'm not so sure the former Congress and Senate or the citizens hearing didn't have an impact, because now we're watching one little crack at a time bring in a little more light and a little more light. Mm-hmm. And the topic is coming out of pop culture. You know, we don't like the word UFOs. We don't like the word flying saucers. Those were foisted upon us, you know, from the media.
Right, right.
But you know, they didn't come from us.
Right. But I use that term UFO because that's what people are used to hearing. You know,
yes, UFOs. And I still do for that same reason.
For the same reason, yeah. And yeah, it was Stephen Bassett that said we need a new lexicon, and we need to call them UAPs and all of this good stuff. But it doesn't matter what you call them. It's
right.
What it is. And yes, UFO means something that is in the sky, that is flying in our skies, that is not readily identifiable. It doesn't mean that they're from some other planet. However, you know, some of these technologies that they display and seemingly a defiance of the laws of physics and aerodynamics, where they're coming from. Who's making these? It's not us. Not anybody that I know on this planet. Are we that far advanced? A lot of people would like to say, yeah, we are. They're just not telling us. It was my understanding that they're like 50 years. We have always been 50 years in advance of what we're seeing, what the public's seeing. Well, 50 years ago, they were still talking about things that we're still not seeing. Am I right?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I'd like to do as a lobbyist, or when we get up there, is let's start releasing some of this information. What needs to be classified today is anything that would compromise our national security or our technological advancements, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to protecting the citizens of the United States. We get that. Nobody's asking for that. But you can't tell me what happened in 1952 with the Washington, D.C. You know, can we read those files? How about what happened with some of the other major, you know, the battle for Los Angeles? We know for a fact that real ammunition went up. Munitions were going up. They were shooting at a craft. This was well documented. Thousands of people saw it. Those are the files that should no longer be classified that we should have access to. And I agree. You know, we're not looking for ways and means. We're not looking to out national security. I think that's the rub that ATIP and Lou Elizondo coming out with the Tic Tac video. Mm. He's only allowed to show such a small portion of that, because the rest of the video reveals ways and means, who the, you know, pilots are, what our capabilities of photography are, you know, all sorts of things. It's classified. It's national security.
Right.
So this is what makes being a ufologist or even a UFO investigator very difficult. This field is not for the faint of heart or the thin-skinned. It's hard because we walk a thin line between national security and what we deserve to know just as a population. Because the one thing we know, and now they admit, and they, meaning government and military, they know they're real too. Well, thanks, guys. We solved that 10 years ago.
More than
right
that.
Now, we're talking about what do they want and exactly who are they. But here, join the club. We'll let you in. Right?
Really, really. Well, they knew it back then too. They knew it in 47,
sure.
For God's sake.
Sure.
They knew it. Well, when I say they, very few people knew it. It was, you know, when Roswell happened, it was so classified that even the head of what's his name now that came out and said, "Yeah, we got one of those crash discs," and he didn't even know it was secret. You know, and then they said,
"Right,
no, keep your mouth shut. This is secret." You know. But
at this point, any advantage we could get, and of course, you know, when you think of the time frame of all this, you know, it's right around World War II, and
right.
You know, we take the heat all the time. You know, the government certainly doesn't have their hand in this because they can't keep a secret. Well, of course they can. Look what happened with the Manhattan Project. There are a lot of things that are kept secret that we find out later, but
when they want
during
us
the
to.
When
they want us to find out, yeah.
Absolutely. During the R&D and the testing process and, you know, anything else, we are absolutely left in the dark. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the government absolutely can keep a secret, and they do it by compartmentalization. But the good news is that it is now out that the military has been investigating these things that are not supposed to exist. Anything unexplained coming into our atmosphere is a national security risk, and it makes it a very important topic in our lifetime.
Really? I need to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Chase Klotzky, a UFO investigator. And Chase, you, I was going to say, we had Lloyd Pye on the show back in March of 2009, and he told us about his passion for the Star Child skull and the DNA from that, and you've continued his investigations into that after Lloyd's passing. What have you discovered since then?
We're so happy we solved it, honestly. And I say we because this was Melanie Young and Carrie McClure and myself that were part of the team that really focused in on the Star Child. And in one of Lloyd's books, he always made the plea that the one thing he wanted more than anything and he always hoped would happen is that real science would look at this Star Child objectively and the DNA and analyze it like they would anything else and just give a truthful, unbiased, blind, let us know exactly what it is. And that, you know, he also wanted to know the truth. So that was our goal. Melanie Young was the original owner. It actually was always the owner. Even I thought Lloyd had it, that it was Lloyd's skull, but it wasn't. It was Melanie Young. And, you know, she wanted to finish his work. And it took a couple of years for her to grieve Lloyd and his work until she decided that she still has his skull and would like the answers. And so we did that. We had DNA done out of a paleo forensic lab up in Canada. They are the premier. They're amazing at what they do. And we knew we had to have somebody that specialized in paleo remains because the Star Child was old. And after having it tested and scouring Lloyd's testing that he had done prior, we had confirmed everything he had learned, except we also had gotten some nuclear DNA, which was from the father. So Lloyd always knew that the mother was human. It was just that we could never find anything from the nuclear DNA or the dad's side. So now we know after the years that, you know, DNA has advanced. There's so much more we can do now than when Lloyd was with us. So this wasn't so much that, you know, we were, you know, better investigators. It was we had more available to us at this time, and we used it. So the first thing we did was have a sex test because that also gives us a clue on the father's genes or if the father would be human because men have an XY and women only have XX. So if there's a Y chromosome in the sex test, then we know that we could most likely find the nuclear DNA and find the dad. And that's kind of how we move forward. And sure enough, the father, we got the DNA completely human, completely Native American, 100%. We even did the origins of the skull, found his native roots exactly where he came from. And Melanie Young has just repatriated his remains back to the Native American community in Mexico. And the Star Child is now finally at rest with the people that he really does belong with.
Well, you know, that in itself is good news. I was kind of hoping that we'd find some, alien DNA. But, you know, but it's just as well because now it's solved. The thing is solved. The same thing with the elongated skulls in Peru and elsewhere. What have we found on that?
Yeah, that offered a lot of anomaly. I have a little over 300 DNA samples I've taken up from Paracas and Lima and some of the other museums there. And this is all under the expedition of L.A. Marzulli. And this was amazing. But we're finding that the origins of the red-headed skulls that are most anomalous, because most of the elongated skulls are cranial manipulation, they're headboarded. Right. You know, it's an artificial deformation. But there were a couple of those skulls, you know, that had the red hair, and they just didn't look like that. There were none of the telltale signs of, you know, this headboarding. And there were also other things like the sagittal sutures were missing, you know, which we know bones can obliterate, but come on, our control samples were starting to get enough that we had something. So when we only had one or two But now that we had like 40 skulls that all had the same type of anomaly, we had something to test. It was awesome. What we found was that these red-headed, very tall, almost Caucasian-looking peoples found in Paracas actually came from the Middle East, which is really blown everything right out of the water, especially with archaeology as they're looking back on timelines. And, you know, of course, you think of the Phoenicians because, you know, they were the first seafarers, but that's not what we have. So I don't know, kind of reworking some timelines here. Not my job. I take the DNA, but we have shaken up some textbooks, put it that way.
Right. Well, I was
with real science. That's what the most amazing thing is that we now have UFO investigators changing archaeology and timelines of human history. Come on, guys. This is awesome.
Yeah, really, really. You know, but hypothetically, if humans are actually, now I may be going off in the left field here, but if humans are actually a hybrid race comprised of simian and alien DNA, that DNA would be accepted as norm. So looking
right.
for what we would consider alien DNA would be an exercise in futility, wouldn't it?
It does, and we have so much of our DNA that they call junk DNA, and I just don't believe that, you know, that's a necessary term. I don't believe anything in our body is junk. I mean, when you look at the human body, it is such a pristine machine when you think of just how your eye works, and then you put it all together and how we move and stay alive and, you know, revamp youth and our hair. It's just amazing, and you have to wonder. You know, so there's a biblical text that says that, you know, this is, you know, we were all made in the image of a God. Mm-hmm. And then you have any kind of hybridization of this as a complete no-no. Mm-hmm. And so that would not be a good thing. Then you have, was this God or were these intelligent other beings? You know, so it's just interesting, the debate going on right now. It's almost religion versus science on, you know, who are the makers? You know, did we really come from, you know, single cell, you know, organisms out of a salt pond millions and zillions of years ago? Is this Darwinian or is this intelligent design?
Right.
I personally think it's intelligent design, whether it's God or aliens. I'm just happy to be complex and breathing air.
Right. Well, it depends on how you're using the word God. I mean, God
right.
typically means something spiritual, but if you're talking about something physical, God means Father, Creator, just Creator, the start of the whole thing.
Right.
So a God would be the gods are crazy, you know, that type of thing. The gods from
yeah.
The gods in their chariots, the chariots of the gods, and you know, so it's debatable. I mean, you could talk forever on that, but you mentioned.
I just think it's kind of cool, David, that like we have still something so big, something so gigantic for us to learn about or search for. We're not afraid to breach a couple doors for.
Right.
Push a little harder. It's bigger than us. It's bigger than being human. It's off planet. And it's the answer to this question that can go back to even who our makers are to, you know, what was that light that we saw last night that freaked us all out? I'm just excited we still have things like this to learn, you know, and maybe we're not supposed to know the answer. The discussion that a lot of us have today as ufologists center around, you know, these beings can come on down and, you know, park their vehicles right there at Central Park anytime they want, but they don't.
But they don't. No.
They could let us know what is going on with some of these, you know, reports we hear. Very, very clearly probative type information. Probative meaning it meets the admissibility, it meets the burden of proof in a court of law. You know, these statements and some of these cases that we worked of people that claim that they have been abducted and we have no idea why. We're guessing. We're, you know, getting more and more information as the decades tick off. But, you know, they don't tell us that either.
Right.
So one must wonder at times if this is even our secret to tell. What if the other that control this whole secret or their comings and going and what they do in here, and they control whether we know or not?
Well, who's, you know, in who's in control? Them,
right,
the government, what?
Discussion. Absolutely. What if they were told that the ramifications against humanity, and that's why this secret is so protected, even at the most obvious, you know, confrontation in front of them. Of course they're real. Come on, guys. Nobody can say they're not anymore. This is ridiculous. We have unknown objects. We have unknown things happening in our skies and even on the ground. You know, we have key people, aerospace, and some of the most trusted people like Skunk Works, you know, in our black world, you know, doing the impossible. And they're coming out saying, we have the technology to take ET home. They're right under our noses. They've been here the whole time. You know, we have Reagan talking. We have, you know, key insiders that have been telling us a story, including our own astronauts, who have been coming out and saying things for ever since we've been going to space. So I almost think if we had been listening, we already have that disclosure. I think where it fits in our lives and how this works, I kind of wonder if it's even up to us.
No, I've often said on the show that I think that the government is, you know, spoon feeding us information so that we just put it all together ourselves. And one day when they say, yeah, these things are real, we say, yeah, we know. And we're not in such shock, you know, like we would have been back in the 40s, you know.
Maybe. I almost think that's a lame excuse. You know, when we have the Condon Report and, you know, very smart men got in a room together and decided what we could do and what we couldn't do and what we could learn. But honestly, when you think that, you just turn on CNN or Fox News or whatever and every night, and we're told of Russian submarines right off the shores of, you know, the North and South Carolina, or the pandemic, you know, and the bird flu that, you know, they're terrified is going to be this new pandemic, not when, if, when, or some of the other dangers, you know, we have hurricanes coming at us, we have tornadoes wiping out. I think people, when told the truth, can handle just about anything, even if they're not going to make it. If that makes sense. So to tell us that they're afraid of how the public would handle something such as UFOs are real, it's like, according to what, you know, North Korea saying they're going to nuke us, like, and everybody talking about that for 3 weeks. Come on, guys, give us a break, right? And then I think also about the countries around the world that openly investigate UFOs, their governments openly do this and talk to the public, and that's Chile and France. And David, no one's freaking out. There's no mayhem in
that's
the streets.
Right.
People aren't mass suicide.
That's right. That's
right.
Right? Right. They came out with France came out with the Cometa report, and people said, hey, wow, that's interesting, and went on with their lives. They're not jumping from the rooftops, so they're going on with their lives, for God's sake.
Exactly, and it gives us something else, because when we open the discussion to the public, you know, we all love our Elon Musk. You know, I kind of have an intellectual crush on him. Obviously, I think a lot of women do, right? It's like,
I don't know.
Awesome.
Don't ask me.
But, you know, he believes that humanity's only survival is off-planet. We get this, but then I stop and think, but wait a minute. Who's going to be on your ships? Not going to be me. I'm not the elite. I'll bet you any amount of money, you're not going to have somebody from Harlem.
Right.
You're not going to have a steel worker.
Right.
Who's going to be on your ships? And then I stop and think, we as a population or a public, when we sit together and discuss the future of humanity, should be part of that discussion. And that's really where some of the rub comes from with people like me. Hey, guys, we probably know a little more than you, the average politician or the average think tank military member, about what's going on here, because MUFON gets anywhere between 700 and 1,100 reports a month.
Right.
Of eyewitnesses all over the world. We've been doing the job of the Air Force since 1969. Bet we have some data, scientific data, you guys might be able to use like we have to figure out a little bit of what's going on. Right?
In fact, I've heard stories where people have reported UFOs to the Air Force, and they tell them, go to MUFON with it. They refer them to MUFON, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, I say we're doing the job of the Air Force because, you know, Project Blue Book closed in 1969. And that was the last open government UFO investigation team until ATIP and Lou Elizondo coming out and openly talking about what he did, mm-hmm. which is pretty friggin' amazing.
Right. That's right. And you got a conference come up, Mysteries of Space and Sky conference on October the 20th. Tell us about that.
I'm so excited about this one because this is an important conference because of the topics that are going to be discussed. And, you know, the people that they try to bring in, you know, they're not the same, you know, same old people that you see at every conference being you know, highlighted.
Right.
So I like it's right here in Baltimore so that it's open to a population of people that really could use some of this information, or if they wanted to know a little more and have the right circumstances, because we all know that one thing is for certain, trying to find the truthful cases in UFOs on the internet, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
You got to weed.
It's ridiculous.
You got to weed wheat from the chaff, and, you know.
Yeah, and for people that have no idea, you know, like we do, you know, we could say, oh, that's a hoax case. You know, that was, you know, hoax back in the 70s. They have no idea. It sounds great to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's these kind of conferences, the truthful conferences that actually bring in the witnesses or bring in the, you know, people that have vettable, searchable histories investigating and, you know, that offer, you know, something good to say and a contribution. And that's what this conference offers. And I'm really excited. It's my first time speaking there, so I'm excited about going, actually.
Okay, where is this? Where and when?
You know what? I'm going to have to look that one up. It's so crazy. I know it's in October.
It's in October 20th. Let me help you with this. October 20th. Mysteries of Space and Sky Conference, okay? But we just need to know where to go for this.
Yeah, if you hit the website, too, you know, that's where you can definitely get more,
right.
more information.
Right.
This is going to be an awesome conference, Mysteries of Space and Sky 2018, and it's going to be held on Saturday, October 20th, 2018, right around the corner, starts at 9:30 a.m., and you can find it at the Bowie Elks Lodge, and it's in Gambrills, Maryland. So it's right there next to Baltimore, easy spot to get to. Great speakers. Travis Walton's going to be there with Jennifer Stein. We're just going to have a blast. It's going to be a great one. Rob Switek will be speaking there as well. My favorite thing about Travis Walton and his story, most people know it by the movie, Fire in the Sky, is that Travis Walton never said that he was abducted by aliens and taken away in a spaceship. That was all done for him, right? When he got back, I mean, this is, what a great case. And to meet Travis in person and to hear the story is just awesome. Mm. So anybody in this area needs to come out and, you know, come and talk to us and ask your questions and, you know, just let's have a great time. Have a big weekend together. It'd be fun.
Well, you said right around the corner. That must be right around the corner from you. I'm in Dearborn, Michigan over here.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I live in Washington, D.C.
Okay. So once again, the place and time?
The place is going to be in the Bowie Elks Lodge, and that's in Gambrills, Maryland. You could go on the website as well, and, you know, you just look up Mysteries of Space Sky 2018, and you come up with this really nice little description. There's maps and everything you need to know, how to get here, tickets, all of that. Tickets are $45.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is so awesome. That's such an affordable conference, and, you know, it's the one day we all get to hang out and just really kick it. Such a great time.
It sounds like a great time, really. It does. And I need to take one more break to remind our listeners, you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. That's 89.3 FM on the radio and WHFR.FM on your computer. And let's see where you're listening to. We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with Chase Klotsky. And Chase, tell us about your book, Admissible.
Admissible was really a hard one to write because it's a manual. It's more about how to investigate, you know, some of these things that don't exist. And again, you know, it's, you know, whether it's Bigfoot, ghosts, or, you know, UFOs. And I always tell people, I don't investigate UFOs. I investigate UFO reports. but, you know, these things that come out there, it's all the same process. And we're really working with, you know, forensic type tools, high skill sets, this high performance type protocols, you know, from the Department of Justice, because, you know, we owe this now. If we're going to be investigators, we need to own this title and we need to do it right. And our evidence needs to be admissible. It needs to be properly processed and carried, and, you know, everything is in place. So that's kind of what Admissible does, is it just lets the reader know, or someone who's interested in becoming a UFO investigator, or in an investigator that, you know, if you don't know what it is, we'll go look type of person. Mm. That's me.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, I've investigated paranormal claims, you know, Bigfoot type creatures, you know, Indaba. Pretty much, if you don't know what it is, I am going to raise my hand and I'll go look. So, you know, it's for people like that. You know, we warn, we give like the ethics of what to do. Is the type of person that should be helping this special population, because honestly, they have nowhere else to go. They have one to call.
That's right.
They can't dial 911. There's no first responders for them. Yeah. When they're scared and they just saw something or an event happened to them, whether it's extraterrestrial or in their mind, they're terrified.
Right.
And there's nowhere to go.
Right. So, and they tell their friends or relatives and they're laughed at. They're ridiculed. So who do you tell? You keep that bottled up for sometimes all their lives. And that's where you come up with the deathbed confessions. People that have seen these things are in the case of Roswell. They saw the crash disc. They saw the aliens. They saw the dead aliens. But they were scared into keeping quiet about it for fear of death by the people that are supposed to be protecting them. You know, and don't get me started on that, you know.
I know. Well, and that was the birth of the cover-up. I think it was really the first time in your face the government, you know, told the whole population of people around Roswell, you didn't see what you thought you saw. You can't ever talk about what you think you saw.
Right.
We're telling you it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're patriots. Back then in those days, you did what the government asked because they needed you to do that.
Right.
It was, you know, part of national security.
Right.
And then over the years, they realized it was a cover-up. You know, they watched it come from, it's all over the radio. Even the AP picked it up. So it's national news to the next day, complete cover-up, and then, you know, the silencing of any witnesses whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the birth of, you know, people like me that just doesn't like that very much. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're a people as a human.
It's a different, it's a different, race. It's a different time today too. It's a much different time today. And
but you know, as human, it's our problem. And for the elite or, you know, the think tank people, you know, usually the people with the biggest bank accounts, right?
Right.
You know, to be able, and because they can afford the secrecy and the luxury to decide what the rest of us get to know, I'm not okay with that. And
really?
I may not get the answer, but I'm certainly not going to, you know, fall in line like a sheep.
All right.
So, and just be okay with that.
Maybe,
you know, I may not find the answer, but I'm looking. And I'm looking hard, and I'm kicking a few doors and, you know, rattling a few cages and, you know, ducking under a tent, you know, curtain every chance I get, if that's what it takes. And, you know, it's just what we need to do.
So maybe,
you know, I'm not okay.
Maybe it's the case that the government doesn't want us to know the truth, be not so much that we'd panic anymore, but maybe it's the case that they've lied for so long and so much smullduggery has been going on that they're just, they're ashamed of their lies and their cover-ups and the people they've silenced and the things they've said to people to silence them and the things they've done, like pushing, I'm not going to think of his name, out of a 10-story building.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Forrester.
Forrester, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, this guy's supposed to be in a mental ward of a hospital. Don't you think they would take precautions so that someone wouldn't do that, wouldn't jump out of a window, commit suicide?
Yeah, and that's only one of 100 other stories like it.
Oh,
you know, when you think of, you know, the story of Benowitz, who was a patriot that reported to a military base, you know, that he was hearing things, you know, that he thought were, you know, secret or coming from the base, and they convinced him that he was here. They, meaning military personnel, by the name of, he was an agent called Doughty, Richard Doughty, mm-hmm. Convinced him that, you know, he was getting alien, you know, radio signals and that he had to keep it a secret. And, you know, the man lost everything. He lost, you know, his livelihood and, you know, he lost his sanity. They ruin lives, you know, to keep a secret. But I have to wonder, there's another thing I think about, David, and that's even worse than the scenario you talked about, which is pretty friggin' bad already, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is, what if they don't really know what they're dealing with either?
They don't.
So what could they tell the public?
Yeah.
It's like, we don't know what it is either, and we've been trying to find out, and they're so superior.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't offer the confidence in a world legion of even an organization like the UN.
Yeah.
Nobody has the answers because they control the agenda.
Yeah, I believe
they
that,
meaning the but, aliens, that, or lack of a better word, these intelligent beings.
Right. I believe that back then, back in Roswell, they said, we're going to just cover this up for the time being, investigate, and as soon as we have a handle on this and know what's going on, we'll tell the people. And that day is yet to come. They never will, because I believe that what's going on is our human brains can just not wrap itself around what's going on.
I did hear kind of a warning, that same thing, and I asked somebody in confidence who was in a position that would have some information, but, you know, I obviously have kept a promise confidentiality, but, you know, I asked this person, is this what we think it is? And, you know, is this something, you know, like they're coming here with their craft and they're intelligent beings from other worlds? And he kind of reached over the table and he said, Chase, what if it wasn't? What if this is much different than you guys think it is? What if this is dimensional and it's not just about that?
Mm.
Meaning space, you know, UFOs and intelligent beings that mean us no harm. What if it all came? What if it was a whole lot more than that? And then I've realized, oh my gosh, when we think back of when ATIP was funded and who was awarded the government contract was Bigelow. Mm-hmm. What did he buy? He bought Skinwalker. That is all about paranormal dimensions and a whole physics that right now probably the leading authority on is CERN. It's a whole new physics for us. I wonder if we couldn't even explain what this is yet.
Yeah, we wouldn't understand. We wouldn't.
Right.
We're like the ants in an anthill watching human construction going on. We don't,
right.
We just.
But we still can't deny the hunt or the investigation.
Right.
And I think this needs to be more public. We're better when we're challenged and we know about it. We went to the moon in how many years after a challenge from John F. Kennedy that said we're going to the moon, not because it's hard, I mean, easy. And I think, you know, when we include the best of the best and humanity to solve our own problems, we might actually grow a little bit past the mentality of an ISIS or, you know, the people that just destroy everything in their path and,
right.
you know, some of these problems. And I think it's a big order. It's a big order. But I believe that some of our politicians really in their heart knew that if we face some sort of threat, how quickly we would have to come together and put down all our problems. And it sounds ridiculously simple and maybe naive or romantic, but I can't think of anything else that would unite humans at this point.
Yes, but there's also Carol Rosen said that there's going to be a false flag alert. You know, the aliens are attacking. We must come together. And it's a false flag.
There are those, and it's a growing community of people that believe this is all good, they're going to save us, and that all of this is good for humanity. I want to be honest with you, in all my years of investigating this phenomena, there's no proof of that.
No.
Where is it? Where
no.
I have seen nothing. Most of our contactees and abductees are traumatized, isolated, ashamed. They have, they're post-traumatic. They're, you know, their lives have not been made better or richer. I just don't see where this is. They often have health issues. I don't see where any of this has been love and light and everything's good for us.
No,
I think we need to be cautious with that.
I equate it to us going out into the forest, or out into the jungle, rather, and anesthetizing a lion, a tiger, and examining it and tracking it and keeping track of their mating habits, etc., etc. And we just don't care what that animal's thinking. We just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
we don't want to hurt it, but we just don't care. Okay, and I think that's what's going on with the aliens. And furthermore, I've often said on the show as well that there are benevolent people, there are malevolent people, and indifferent people. And why shouldn't it be that way throughout the universe, you know? So it might be a combination of all of those things.
Yes, and the higher your intellect, you know, a lot of times you're not paying attention to, you know, the day-to-day things that, you know, someone like me would. You have somebody who doesn't care if his tie has a stain on it, but, you know, he has to go to work. You know, he's more focused on something else. So there are, like, those different types. I just, you know, the last question, I know we're running out of time, but it's mostly... a question we ask ourselves, look at us as humans. Do they want us in their world? do we deserve to be? I mean, you know, we war with everybody. You know, we're rowdy little species down here. You know, we like to beat our sticks and poke dead things. You know, it's like, come on. Right? So all of a sudden, you have this highly intelligent council. Just, you know, imagine a galaxy council of, you know, these very intelligent people that, you know, now have mastered, you know, the kind of science we haven't even discovered yet, you know, space travel. And they come down here and watch us for a while. I wouldn't invite us anywhere. It's kind of like, you know, let me see, you got, you know, these guys over here, you know, wanting to go back to the Stone Age, you know, where they rape women for, you know, punishment, and, you know, they're beheading people left and right. They destroy anything in their path. And, but let's go to the, you know, wonderful, you know, enlightened countries. Oh my gosh, look how we treat each other here. We walk over our homeless. They're freezing on the streets. You know, we turn our blind eyes too. It's just, are we worthy?
No, I don't think they would want to. It also makes you think, why didn't we go back to the moon? You know, and beyond. Well, we talk about we're going to go to Mars. I don't think so. I think we'll be stopped from that. What do you think?
I agree. I love that you brought up the moon. Yeah, why did we stop? You know, why is it now that Russia is so far ahead of us in a space race that it's ridiculous? We have to use their rockets to go to their space station. because we've dropped the ball with a space program. And why? Why did we do that? That's nothing in our character as Americans. We've never done anything like that before. So there's secrets, David. There's secrets. Roswell, right?
Why don't they let us in on these secrets? Very quickly, because we are running out of time, but tell us quickly about your book, Are Aliens Real? How do you talk to children about this?
I know. This is so crazy because I have grandkids, and my children grew up knowing what I do. And, you know, they knew I was sane, but... They were always kind of proud. They thought it was kind of cool that I was, you know, a little radical or a little rebel off on this little trip here. But, you know, when your grandkids are asking, I have my grandson, and he asked, the book is called Are Aliens Really Real? Because that's what he asked me pervasive. It was so cute. And he calls me Mims. Mims, are aliens really real? And at that point, I knew whatever I told him, he would take to his heart and probably always believe. Because we're very close. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized we have to be very careful with what we say and how we say it. We have to speak the truth and we have to keep our integrity. But mostly, nobody cares what I think. Science doesn't care what we believe. We have to be very cautious how we hand this over to the next generation. So there's a lot of questions in the book. There's a little boy with his grandmother walking through a park, and there's a little innuendo there because they're in the park, and he's asking these questions like, are they scary? Why don't they move here? Why don't they like us? Or why do they like us? You know, all these little questions. And she answers in a way that promotes them to look for their own answers, to not think it's okay just because somebody tells you something that, you know, it should stifle their curiosity, that they need to look for themselves. But there's a little alien on every picture that the kids like to find as they come in. They're, you know, they're somewhere in the background, little gray alien that they can look for. And, you know, the innuendo is just because you didn't see them doesn't mean they're not already here.
All right. And the name of that book, again, I think I misspoke on the...
Okay. It's called Are Aliens Really Real? Both of the book, Admissible, and the children's book. Really bold colors. I just really like this book because at the end she kind of tells him, you know, that it's important that, you know, he get involved and he look for these answers because sometimes there are questions in life that it doesn't matter what you're told. You know in your heart where your truth is. So, but they're all on Amazon, but it's Are Aliens Really Real? And Invisible.
Very good. Very good. And where else can, do you have a website that people can go to?
I do. It's just chasekletsky.com. So it's my name, and the last name is K-L-O-E-T-S-K-Y. T-Z-K-E. And I'm on Facebook, Twitter. I'm horrible with Facebook. I don't even look at Facebook messages. But you can contact me through my website. I love to hear from people.
And the website again is?
Is my name. It's just chasekletsky.com. And it's easy to find.
Very, very good. Chase, I really appreciate you joining us today. And there are a lot of questions, a lot more questions I could ask you. But perhaps we can do this again sometime, eh?
I would like that very much. This was, you had great questions. I had such a great time with you that, yeah, let's do this again.
Okay.
That would be wonderful.
Good. Give it a couple months and I'll give you a call, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. And We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. That's UFOImplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 12 o'clock noon. That's our new time. And when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. So until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Guys and dolls, you are at the Malt Shop with Daddy G here on WHFR, and we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the Malt Shop where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are back in the 50s.